This morning, I have the great pleasure of introducing Victoria to you. I was first connected with her through a mutual friend through Kids Community Church. Yeah. So this lady I was volunteering with, they're sponsoring a family, and they connected with Victoria, and so they passed on her information to me, and it's been really great, actually. This is our first time meeting, so but we've been exchanging a lot of emails, and she will be helping us with our welcome of the Yusufs. So I just want to read a bit about her to give you some background. Victoria was born and raised in Aleppo, Syria, and graduated with a degree in business administration and human resources management from the Middle East Institute in 2012. In that summer, Victoria relocated from Syria to her ancestral homeland of Armenia, where she studied tourism and hotel management at the European Regional Academy of Armenia. A year later, she relocated to Beirut, Lebanon, where Victoria worked in tourism, hospitality, and also began fundraising and support work to help displaced people from Syria. After further work in Armenia, volunteering as a project manager for several nonprofits, Victoria settled in Vancouver with her husband in September 2015, so she's a newcomer as well. Victoria is fluent in English, Arabic, Armenian, and Turkish. Impressive. In her spare time, she enjoys making handmade jewelry, cooking, and exploring the mountains of Vancouver's North Shore. So, would you give her a warm F3C welcome to Victoria?
Okay. Hi. Do you guys want to come, like, closer? I have a panoramic view. Thanks, everyone, for having me here. It's a pleasure for me to talk to you about my homeland and my origins at the same time. I didn't want to make it today a lot about the war in Syria. I'm sure you guys got enough of that sadness, so I'm not going to put you through that again. I'm going to talk to you about how Armenians started to exist in Syria. And I'm going... Is this working? the right one? Right? Yeah? Okay. Yeah? Okay, so you guys know where the family is from. They are from the northern eastern part. That's where they live. And that part is the first part of Syria that started accepting the Armenians when they first started coming to Syria. And the first Armenians to arrive in Syria was in the 8th century. He was with one of the kings of Armenia, where he was the first king, and they went through there to Aleppo, which is here. This wasn't a part of my presentation, but I just wanted to, like, put light on it. So this one is a video. I want to start it with a video about Syria, about how nice it is. It doesn't include anything from the war. It's a cheering one, but it's not working, so I have to do it through the YouTube video.
Thank you.
the Armenians in Syria are either Syrian Armenians or Syrians who are old Armenians. Like the family that you guys are sponsoring, they are old Armenians because you can tell it from their family name and the regions that they live at. So the Armenians who just immigrated or came as refugees to Syria who are Syrian Armenians are the Armenians who came in 1915 during the genocide. And they, you can tell by their last names, they have I-A-N or Y-A-N at the end of their last name. And Syria accepted these refugees in 1915 when the genocide was happening in southern Turkey, which was the old Armenia. Does anyone know about it? Yeah? So the genocide happened on the hands of the Ottoman Empire, which is not Turkey. It is Turkey today, but it is not Turkey back then. So it happened on their hands, and which was basically claiming on all the southern parts of Turkey, which used to be Armenia, and deporting all the Armenians from there into the desert in Syria, which is called Palmyra now. They started going from the eastern part of Syria. I'll just go. This is a general information about it. So it started from the eastern, northern part of Armenia, going through the desert. Syrians were very welcoming, and they opened their houses to the Armenians, often kidnap them so they can hide them in their houses and they don't have to go through the death marches or all the killings or whatever what was going on during the genocide. Some of them, they were kids because it was the easiest thing to kidnap the kids and take them into their houses. And some of these kids didn't remember their last name, so they took Syrian or Arab last names. There are a lot of Syrians who are Arabs, but they do remember they're Armenians, but they don't know their last name. It might be the same situation with the Yusuf family, because Yusuf is the Arabic of Joseph. So it might be the same situation with their ancestors. This is a picture taken in 1915. This is the northern part of Syria, the way where they took the Armenians towards the desert in Palmyra. And this is the mass killings they've done. And this is from the archive of an Arab general who wrote in Arabic on it, saying that he commanded all the soldiers to start building camps in Hasake, which is very close. I think they are from Hasake, right, the family? So this is in Hasake in 1916. They built these, and then that's where the Armenians started going around Syria. Hasake and Deir ez-Zor was the first places to accept the Armenians. This is a church in Deir ez-Zor, which is an hour driving from Hasake in northeast part of Syria. They built this in memory of the genocide, and it is said that underneath this church, before it was built, there was a group of Armenians who just committed suicide because they didn't want to continue on the death march to the desert, so they killed themselves here. So underneath this church, there are still their bones, which is kept here. This church is not there today. ISIS, when they went to their zone, this was the first thing they destroyed because of this thing underneath it. This is from outside, and this is how it looks like now. This is the inside of the church. So Armenians who stayed in Syria, they were, like I said, in the northern eastern part of Syria. And then from there, they started migrating to Cyprus, Lebanon, Jordan, or Egypt. And from there, they started going all over the world. Armenians in Syria make a big part of their history because once the minute they got there, even the government was very helping, and they gave all the Armenians the Syrian citizenship. They allowed them to open the Armenian schools and the churches, and everything started from there. There were Christians in Syria before that. Christians in Syria started at the times of St. Paul. You guys know St. Paul, right? Who went to Damascus, and he was blind, and he just converted to Christianity, and he got his eyesight again. So, where were we? Yeah. So Armenians have a big part in political parts of Syria too. We have a lot of Armenians in the government. There are a lot of Armenians in the community section. There's the first Armenian female who sang at the opera house in Syria was an Armenian girl, which was 15 years ago. About the Armenian alphabet, the Armenian alphabet is unique to its kind, so it's not used anywhere else. It's not linked to any language tree. It's closer to the Gregorian one, but it's not linked to anything. It's only used in Armenia. The person who invented it or made it clearer, because there was Armenian alphabet before, but it's nothing that's like the alphabet that looks today. His name is Metrop Mashtot. He founded in 405, and he had it in his vision that he was hammering the letters on the floor of the first church in Armenia, and that's how he found it. He's the same person to find the alphabet in Georgia, the country, and some of, like, helped find the alphabet of the old Albanian. So Armenian is a very old language. It was one of the languages that accepted to translate most of the books about Christianity and translated the Bible to Armenian. And it is divided into two sects. There is Western Armenian and Eastern Armenian. The Western Armenian is what I speak, because I'm not from Armenia. My ancestors come from there, but because they fled from the western part of Armenia, which is nowadays Turkey, we speak a different dialect. It is more influenced by Turkish and Arabic sometimes. We use more words that are close to Arabic or Turkish. Western Armenian is spoken by people who live in the Arab countries, except Iran. It's Persian. It's not Arabic country. And in the States, here in Canada, Armenians who live in Canada, they speak Western. Eastern Armenian is spoken by Armenians who live in Armenia, Georgia, Iran, sometimes Iraq, and in Russia. There's a big population of Armenians in Russia. They immigrate there, they work there, and because also Armenia was a part of the Soviet Union until 20 years ago. On a side note too, I want to say most Armenians in Syria speak fluently four languages like I do. It is impressive to you guys maybe, but for me, it's something normal that I don't even mention it. Like, I don't know why, because I know Arabic because I grew up in Syria and my friends were speaking Arabic. I know Armenian because we speak Armenian at home. I speak English because they teach us in the Armenian schools that I used to go. And I know Turkish because there's a proverb that says, know the language of your enemy. Like, I feel bad to say this proverb. It's not why I know. I have a lot of Turkish friends. But it's unconsciously because my parents or my grandparents always spoke Turkish in front of me, so I don't understand as a kid. That's how I got to, like, get a sense of, like, I need to learn this language. Like, as a kid, my mom is saying to my grandmother, like, go to the room or something like that. This is the first sentence that was translated from the Bible into Armenian by Metrop Mashtot. It's from Book of Proverbs. I'm sure you all are familiar with it. It's also the first sentence to be translated into Armenian. Okay, so Armenian, you guys know where Armenia is there, right? Okay, it's very tiny. It's like a quarter of what Syria is. There's Turkey in there, and then that's Iran, and then, like, you have Syria here. So Armenians in Armenia, they are not more than 3 million. This is the estimate number, but there's way less than that. 3 million are registered there, but I'll tell you, half of them are outside the country working. And Syria by itself has more than 100,000 Armenians in it. And because of the war now, we have, on the internet, it just says 5,000, less than 5,000. It's way less than that. The school that I used to go in Aleppo on itself has 5,000 students, because it was one of the biggest Armenian schools. Now they only have 400 students. This is what officially says, but it is not true. But I wanted to include it there. Damascus is the capital of Syria, and that's where the Christianity in Syria started, before the Armenians. Armenians were in there, like, paper. But Christians were in Damascus since the days of St. Peter, when he came, because Christians were there before him, and he was following them right? So Damascus has one of the oldest churches in Syria. You can, the old city of Damascus is more Christian than Arabic or Muslim. The Christians in Damascus, they started going all over Syria after the Umayyads, which is the Ottomans. They came to Syria and they were under their, like they invaded Syria for like around 300 years. I don't know exactly the number. And that was before the French Empire came and there was the psychic people stuff going on. So this is the gate of St. Peter. They built it in during the time when he was there. They did some touch-ups to it later on, but until now it is there. I was there last summer. It is relocated in a place called Bab Kisan in Arabic. In Arabic, people usually refer to it as Peter's Door, and there's no church or anything behind it. It's like just residential building, but people often go on the steps to pray. And you often see, like, Sunday school, they take the kids to there to have their, like, outdoor activities, but they're always on the set. Okay, Maloula is one of the most interesting places in Syria because until today, they speak the language that Jesus spoke, which is the Western Aramaic. Western Aramaic was spoken by Jesus, and after him for around 500 years, it was spoken in the region, but then people stopped speaking it because there was all these other, like, Turkish or Arabic or French, like, all these languages. When they came in power, the Aramaic was not spoken a lot. So Aramaic is only spoken in Maloula, which is a small village. All the houses are carved inside the mountains, which is very rocky. This is the village. It is one of the mostly Christian populated villages in Syria. It's one of the three of them. It's three chains next to each other, but Maloula is the biggest one. These are one of the churches in there. It's said that the churches in here are, some of them are like, they're built more than 1,000 years ago, but they continued working on it during the time. This is how life is in Syria right now. This is an Armenian church in eastern part of Syria where the family is coming from. This is also from the eastern part of Syria. I want to say some facts about Syria, which includes some stuff about Armenians too. So Armenians are a small community in every neighborhood you go to, in any city in Syria. They exist. Anybody knows about Armenians. Armenians are very close to Kurdish people because during the massacres, Kurdish people were helping them mostly to cross the borders. Most Kurdish people in Syria speak Armenian too. Armenians have their own schools. We teach Armenian in the schools, in the Armenian schools. It is famous for non-Armenians too, it's people will to go or send their kids to those schools because they teach an extra language and the English level of those schools are a bit higher than the Arabic schools. This is something you would see every day in Syria. This is something we don't find it here because this is the local bread that's made in the government-held bakeries. You have to line up for 2 hours to get this bread. It's next to nothing. It's free. The government has an agreement with the people that rice, bread, sugar, and flour is free every month according to how many people you have in the house. And doesn't matter what's your level in the community, you're poor or you're not, or doesn't matter. Everybody gets these coupons to go and get them. People cannot hold them because it's fresh every minute. It's giant machines making it. So people will often put them on the fences, on other people's cars, on the floor. Sometimes the traffic would stop because there's an old lady who decided to put the bread on the floor in the middle of the street to cool it down before she takes it home. It is very normal. This is the love of our lives as Syrians. It is the, I think it's one of the symbols of Syria, like the unknown symbols. This car would be everywhere in the town. Mostly Armenians would use it because it's easy to carry things in the back. You put your kids and the wife in the back. And it's awesome because when you hit something, nothing happens to it. Alright. One of the common things here, I'm very glad to share it with you guys, so you know it when the family arrives here. It is very normal to send your kids to the neighbor that you never talked to ask for potatoes or tomatoes, if you're making a salad, and then have coffee with them. So it is one of the normal, like, most normal things to do. Like, you start making a salad, you don't have to worry about going to the grocery shop to get the rest of your stuff. You can just go and ask your neighbor, and most of the times it will end up by your neighbor saying, I have this and I have this, let's make the dinner together. Having coffee as, like, women gathering, having coffee, is something very, very common. It can happen 5 to 7 times a day. Especially for women who don't work, and they have a small house to live in, they like talking, gossiping, coffee is the key. It has to be in those small cups. It has its special utensil that you cook in, it's called jazve. I don't know if you guys, it's very similar to the Turkish one. It's a little pot that you only heat the coffee in it. You can't cook anything else in it unless you like really want to boil an egg. Just as a joke, you can also borrow this from your neighbor. It's very normal, and they will carry it to your house with you. Yes. Just a little bit more about the Armenians on a side note. My slides are done. I couldn't add more stuff because I was very hesitant if it's going to work on the Google Docs or something. Armenians play a big part of the community in Syria. That's why they are very respected. We never felt that we were guests there. Because from the first time that our ancestors, our grandparents were there, they just made us a part of the family in Syria, anywhere you go. There was never a difference of Christians or Muslims when it comes to Armenians, especially, because everybody knows that Armenia is the first Christian nation in the world. They are the first people who accepted Christianity as their whole nation. So Armenians who were there, because of their history, how they got there, it was very uncommon for them to travel around, to go around. Because I remember, for example, since I was a kid, the biggest traveling I've done was going 1 hour away from the city to a town called Kesab, which is an Armenian village. And that was a big traveling for me. And because of the history, how we got there, our parents or grandparents were scared of leaving again. So now because it's happening again, I can't explain how hard it is, especially for Armenians, to be displaced again. And I hope this is going to be helpful so you guys know how to treat the family that's arriving. I was very lucky to come here, and I had my friends, I had my, everyone that I knew literally was here. And I did my high school here 10 years ago, so it was familiar for me. But for these guys, especially for them, because they're from the eastern part of Syria, that's a bit more conservative area. Armenians are less in there, so it's probably like five or six families that know each other, and that's it. Where I grew up, there was a bigger community of Armenians. The northern eastern part of Syria is conservative. It's full of Bedouin people, which are more conservative than the Muslim people. I'm not saying that they are not, that like they're very close to each other, they're friendly. The Armenians in there speak more Arabic than Armenian because of the nature in there, less Armenian. That's all I want to say about them. You told me that you're going to put them in touch with the Armenian community too. I'm sure they will appreciate it. If you guys have questions, I'm very glad to answer. I tried to collect like most of the things that I would like to tell people who don't know about Armenians in Syria. I'm sure I'm missing a lot. I'm not saying I've like said everything. I'm sure I'm missing a lot, but like please ask me, and I'll be glad to answer. There's a shop, I don't know where, I brought my own with me. I take it with me everywhere. Even when I went to Armenia, which is like the place for coffee pots, I brought one with me. But there's a shop called Yasmina, which has some like oriental stuff. I want to add on a, you know, because of my experience with talking with other communities who are sponsoring Syrian refugee families, they are always worried about the food or where to take them for grocery shopping, or especially meat, because Muslim people eat the specific halal meat, for example. You guys don't have to worry about that with Armenians. Armenians just literally eat everything. We don't care. As long as it says food, that's it. We're there. Yeah, those coffee pots, you can find them in Yasmina. I'm not sure about the address. I'll get it for you if you want. Or I can get one for the family. yeah, any other questions? You mean during the past 4 years, if not? Yes. Well, it was for as of like people coming as refugees to Syria. I think it stopped after 1948, after the Sykes people was there and like they did. I don't know if you guys know about the Sykes people agreement. It was an agreement between France and Egypt and England to like divide. It wasn't Syria before. Syria was bigger. It was called Bilad al-Sham. Sham is the old name of Syria, the country of Sham. And it was a part of Iraq and Jordan and Palestine, Lebanon, all together it was as one country. And at some point they were joined with Egypt. And Sykes people basically divided England, you take this, and France, you take this part, and the Ottomans take this part. So before that happened, the refugees were always welcome, and you can get the citizenship and everything. And Syrian people in general, Middle Eastern people are very welcoming, not in a sense of like not saying that it is the opposite of what Westerns are. Westerns are very welcoming too. Like you would welcome someone to your house, and if you know there is someone as a refugee, you're more welcoming to them. But Syrians are more like, come into my house, and that's it, you live there. This is how it happened before. So after that, after all this political stuff that happened to the country, I think the people just lost trust in foreigners. And that's how it started, because I used to work as a tour guide in Syria. And there's always this, like, electricity between a foreigner that comes to the country. We're still welcoming to them, but the government authorities would always press on them, like, why are you in Syria? What's the reason you are here? So this, while the government does this, the people are still welcoming, but because it's always like this, and you can't get a status in there, like Palestinian refugees, on their passports, it still says they're Palestinian refugees until now. Even though they've been there before the Armenians too. Us Armenians, we don't have that on our passport. On my passport, you can't tell I'm Armenian. It doesn't specify what race or what part of the world I'm from. But then after those things, they started changing it. In the recent 4 years, the reason why there's no people going there, obviously because of the war, you don't want to go as a tourist there now. I took my husband there, Ben, who was here as a British citizen, but I took him as my husband, a part of my family, to Syria last summer. Nobody wants to go through that on the border of all the humiliation of, like, you're British and you did this to our country. But then the people in there are still friendly to you. So it is, let's put it as the government or the people who are responsible in protecting the country, they're a bit overprotective, so they're always curious what the foreigners are thinking about them or what the aim of being there. So that's the only reason there's no more refugees in there. It stopped in the 14th in Seoul. Anyone else? Sorry? Oh, I wish. I wish. Like, I miss it so much. I miss it. Like, you can't imagine. It's usually this big. It's very basic to make it. And I don't know if it's... I don't know how they make it until now. It's just like... Basically, when I go to the bakery, it's a fence that doesn't allow you to go closer because someone will throw the bread at you. That's it. Because if you go closer, you might want more. And all you see is this giant machine that has its escalator bringing all the bread down. And behind it, there's an army of people with, like, flour everywhere. And, like, maybe some people sitting and playing some backgammon next to it. I don't know how they make it, but the closest bread to it is the pita bread here. It's not as close. It's very white. It's, like... comparing to this one. It's made with the same flour. I don't know, maybe our flour was dirty. But I like it. Like, yeah, it's one of the best breads. It's not. It's comparing with the pita bread here, the pita bread here is sweeter than that. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with the bread, but I know it is free for every. It's not free, but like you can buy like 2 kilos of it for like 25 cents, and you can go every day. Yeah. So the government, yes, the government has a deal. This happened when the current president's father was in rule and he was trying to make the country into a better place. And when in the late 60s, I think, if I'm not wrong, when people in homes particularly started protesting against the government, just like it started now, but his father, I think, was a bit more smart. And he decided to give this deal to the people, said that the bread and the rice and the flour, and there are some other stuff too. You get them with like big bags like this every month into your house. Like, you just go, he made this system of like having coupons for each family member, and you just go, they take a coupon from you, and you get all this like enormous amount of yeah. Okay, so Armenians are, I always see it, Arab people from Syria always find it harder to get out of there because everything is in Arabic and they're close to each other too. Armenians are more open to new things and new cultures, new countries. The Armenian culture is not very close, but similar to... Like, let's say as close as it can be to the Western culture, we don't have that much strictness. There are a lot of rules of everything. Like, I'm not even gonna start with them. But Armenians always, I think, find it easier to integrate with a new culture. Like, I know a lot of Armenians in Toronto, not here. I've not met many except the pastor in the church in Richmond. But usually Armenians find it easier. I think it's also because most of them speak English easier. Like, they know it already a bit. And I think it's just the way we grew up, being more open and having the idea of... Let me put it as, I think it's... I've never thought about that, actually. That's why. I think it's also because every Armenian has a relative in the States or in Canada. Everyone, like, it's impossible if you don't have one. So that also keeps the door open to it, I think. Yes. Wait until you see two Armenians meet. Well, I think so. One of the things is, so my family moved to Canada, to Toronto, in 2004. That was when I first came to Canada. I only did one year of school and we went back. I didn't stay for too long. But until now, I remember my mom's struggle of, like, watching the neighbor's door. Like, I want to knock that door so bad. She would make a cake and stand next to it. She would hear the neighbor walking past. She would be, oh, she's closed the door. I knock it. And that's it. Like, for months, she would sit in the balcony of my uncle's house, like, having a coffee there, and, like, watching the neighbor's doors, each one of them. And after 3 months, she found out that the neighbor in front of us was Palestinian, and she was thinking the same. She didn't know. So I think sometimes talking helps. The problem here is, like, if you want to go to your neighbor's house, you have to call them, make sure they're at home, sometimes take an appointment for, like, 2 weeks later. The thing in Syria is, like, especially Armenians too, you send your kids to the school in the morning, you know your neighbor sent her too, and you just see them, like, going back to the house. You're like, I'm coming in 5 minutes, and coffee is ready, that's it. That's how it happens. And then lunchtime, oh, let me have a coffee before I start the lunch. And that's how it starts going on. Anyone else? It's not very big. I think the Armenian population in Vancouver is mostly Armenians from Armenia. I told you guys, Armenian is Eastern and Western Armenian. They are very different Armenians. It took me 6 months to be able to understand the Armenian they speak there. It's the same alphabet, but they have different way of grammar, of writing things. The only thing that's the same is the Bible, how the Bible is read. Because they believe that the Western Armenian is the original one that was written, but then the Eastern Armenian started because there's a lot of Russian influence in it. So Armenians who live in Vancouver here are the ones who speak Eastern Armenian. I've met few of them. Because I speak Eastern Armenian, it's not hard for me to, like, be in touch with them or understand them. Sometimes it can be very challenging to understand them. They use a lot of Russian words. The Armenians in Toronto are mostly Armenians from Syria and Lebanon, who speak Western Armenian. And the population is way, way bigger. There's, like, I don't know if there's any Armenian school here who teach Armenian in Vancouver. There is two in Toronto. And I only know about the two Armenian churches here in Vancouver. I don't know if there's another one. One of them is close to here, I think, right? I don't know. I'm not sure. There's one in Richmond, I know that one, and then there's one on, like, 40-something. Oak. Oh, it's 67, okay. Yeah, once two Armenians meet, that's it. Like, you just have to show their faces to each other. That's it. Like, it's gonna be a lifetime friendship. Like, because they, even if I don't know an Armenian, I don't know if it's because of the way Armenians brought up their kids, but the minute, like, we grow up learning that the minute you say an Armenian, that's a part of the family. It's like you've been through the same thing, you come from the same place, and that's how we grew up. Every Armenian thinks the same way. There's no one that thinks different. So the minute you just meet, like, take two Armenians, meet each other, that's it, the friendship started. Like, you don't have to worry about, like, cultural differences or if they come from different places. Or because Armenia and Syrian Armenians, they have different cultures too. But that doesn't, like, doesn't affect anything. Yeah? Can you speak up? Depends. Some Armenians prefer a hug. Like, a lot of Armenians I know would give a hug. You don't have to think about the strictness of greeting a Muslim. Like, with Muslim people, you can only greet the husband and the son and the wife because, like, it's maximum you shake hands with her. You don't have to worry about this stuff with Armenians. They will usually direct you to Armenians. Like, you shake hands, if you see one shoulder came to the front, that's it, you're getting a hug. Yeah? Oh, what kind of coffee is in there? It's the same coffee. Yeah. It's the same Turkish coffee, but we put cardamom and cloves in it. Oh, you got it. Nice. Yeah. No, that's it. Yeah. Nothing particular about Finland, they're usually everywhere. The only difference that I see between the difference of, like, dealing with children in the Armenian or Western culture is here usually when adults gather, like the kids are in their rooms or they're playing. In Armenia, you would be talking about, like, I don't know, something that the kids shouldn't hear, please play with, they don't care. They don't have that strictness about the kids, most of them, not all of them. The kids usually have, I think, less discipline for bedtime. That's something maybe you guys should know. Like, nobody, there's no Syrian or Armenian parents that would be like, oh, it's 10 o'clock, go to bed now, now, now. So, are you sleepy? No. Okay, you can stay awake. Yeah. No, not with Armenians. It's very close to how we deal here. More. Some of them, I don't have children, so I don't know what I would do with kids, but what I know from my parents, there's a lot of, after we go home, I'm going to have a talk with you. That's mostly like, oh my god, something nice is going to happen, but then they forget about it. That was my experience. I worked 5 years in a school. Usually they spoil their kids a lot. Yes, the kids are usually For example, if a kid is sad for more than one day about something that they wanted, like it's a depression for their parents. Like, oh my god, my kid wants this and I can't find it or I can't have it, it would literally be a depression for them. If they're spoiled in this matter, like they like to give to their kids what they can. My dad used to work 2 jobs so I can go to the Armenian school, which was more expensive than normal, so I don't know why he had to do it, but because, like, when they do something for their kids, like, that their life is better. Yeah. For Armenians? So the Armenian schools are private schools in Syria. They cost a lot more than the regular or the government schools. They teach a different method of English in it. It's more intense. Like the government schools, they would have one class of English of 1.5 hour a week. In the Armenian schools, we would have 6 classes. And the books are more advanced, and they start teaching English language in the Armenian schools from kindergarten. We start learning it. In kindergarten, we basically learn 3 alphabets, Armenian, Arabic, and English. In the government schools, you start learning Arabic in kindergarten. In grade 5, I think, or 4, you start learning the English. And that's it. That's why the education system for Armenians, like people who went to Armenian schools, is a bit higher. They also, like, I don't know why they made that system, but they're always like 1 year ahead. Like when I came here to go to school, I finished my 9th grade. But the classes that I've taken and the exams that I did when I came to Toronto, I did 11th grade. It's always 1 year up. It's not the same with the government schools. Like if these kids, the kids of this family, they went to a government school, it's not gonna be the same. And as I see the son's English is pretty good, so I'm going to assume he went to Armenian school. Yeah. We start first. We'll start from here. Family were already in Canada? Okay. In 2004, there was no war. Everything was perfect. And we were just immigrants who came here. My dad was already working in Tokyo for a few years, and he decided to move it to Toronto because his brother lived there. Sorry, no, well, gone. Yeah, so when he moved there, we all moved together. And since there was no war or no idea of refugees, people were very welcoming. But I'm going to say it was less welcoming than now. Like now, I'm not a refugee here. I immigrated here on a spousal with my husband. But now when I say I'm from Syria, they're like, oh my god, can I help you with anything? Like, no, relax, I'm okay. Before, but it doesn't mean they weren't welcoming. They were very, very welcoming. Like, I had my neighbor who offered to drive us to school every day in the morning, and he did that for 3 months. We had people who helped my dad open up his shop in the city, and it was very friendly, very, like, when we go, the times when we take appointments from a neighbor to go after them, not the same day for a coffee, was very accommodating. They were very welcoming. But like I said, it's not as much as it. I think now people are more welcoming. There's like definitely, there's a big difference now. Like before you would walk in the street and you would say, I'm from Syria, or even like saying I'm an immigrant. It's normal, right? Like half of Canada is immigrant. So now I think there's more that hospitality is obvious, and which is something very, very good. Yeah. Are you talking about Armenians who are especially not in Armenia? So this is something of places in Syria that have Armenian population, but they don't have Armenian schools or Armenian community. But somehow they all teach, like, they would have kids, and the kid is 4 years old, and he knows how to write his name in Armenian. It's, the parents always teach, like, if I have kids, there's no Armenian school here. I am going to teach them the Armenian language. I have a very, I call her my aunt, but she's my grandmother's aunt. She escaped the genocide, and she lives in the States, because when she escaped, she came to Syria, and she's like 104, 105 years old. She lives in LA now. She escaped the genocide, and she got on a boat to Cyprus. And in Cyprus, during that time, I don't know how it happened, the king of Ethiopia adopted kids from who survived the Armenian genocide and shipped them in to the States. So since then, she lives there. She speaks Armenian. She can, like, communicate in Armenian, but she writes with English alphabet. She writes the Armenian with English. She doesn't know English until now. She knows the alphabet. She can't, like, she can speak, like, well enough to go grocery shopping or, like, do the daily life stuff, but she never worked. She always lived with people who, her relatives who supported her. And until now, like, she doesn't read or write Armenian with the Armenian alphabet. And I think it's a part of the culture. Armenians love to keep the language because we all know, like, you saw how small Armenia was. And let's be honest, 3 million people in a country, like, you can't even put that on the map. So I think it's an instinct from you. Instinct that, like, you want to teach it to the next generation. You don't want it to be lost. Yeah? Oh, it doesn't have a bread. It's just bread. It's just bread. It doesn't have a name. It's like in Syria we don't have a name, but I think here you can call it the pita bread. It doesn't have a name. Like, even in Syria, it's just called kabbaz, which means bread in Arabic. Yeah? Yes, the bakery opens from 5 to 10 in the morning. And your lineup would be 2 hours. It closed. They close at 10. They close at 10 in the morning. Usually what happens in Syria is, because it's very cheap, it's like 25 cents. People add 5 cents on that, and there are the street kids who, like, don't refuse to go to school. They would be there. They would accept for 5 cents to line up for 5 in the morning for you and then bring it to your house. The ones that I met, they're doing pretty bad. I mean, bad as in, like, they've got the full support, but I, like, being from the same place, and I think being a female too, especially, so, like, women express more, right? So I know 3 families, and 3 of these families, women, like the wives, they always express how bad they feel. They don't know the language, especially because they're Muslim too. That big difference, it's a huge difference, especially if they are not from a city. Because in the city you have more, like, you have Armenians, you have the Christian people. But in the villages, it's only Muslim people. So, like, this one family that they've not even been outside their village. There's, like, they live 2 hours driving from Damascus, the capital. They've not been there before. And, like, suddenly they're like, here. When they came here, they were, like, they put a map in front of me. And they were like, just show me where we are now. I'm like, are you serious? Like, they didn't know where they are. And they thought they can, like, sit on a train and go to Syria one day. They don't have to take the plane. They only did that because, like, some people paid more money. So it is very, very hard for them. It is, like, heartbreakingly hard. I'm guessing it's not going to be as hard for this Armenian family because, like I said, Armenians are more open to things. They're not as strict as the Muslim people, but I never, like, you never know what they've been through the past few years. Like, what happened there in the past 4 years, 5 years, just can destroy, like, the strongest person, or, you know, you never know, like, especially if they're from the eastern, northern parts where ISIS had their bases for, like, longer than anywhere else in Syria. We will hope they're okay. Yeah, the most important thing, I think, is the emotional support to them. And never feel ashamed to stay, or like, never, like, think twice to stay. Like, do you want me to come over and sit? Like, even if you're sitting there and not talking, people from Syria love, like, someone being there. They hate staying alone. Even if you're there watching the wall, both of you, it's okay. It's okay. So if the kids went to government schools, most government schools are females and males. Yeah. If they've been to a private school or an Armenian school, it's mixed. Except there's only one Catholic branch of a school in Syria, but they have schools in every city. They have the female and the male separate, and their teachers are nuns. Except that if they've been to a government school, you know they've been separated. So it's a big, actually, like, the family that's here, like, two of them, they're in Vancouver, they go into school, the kids. It's very interesting to see that the girls' reaction, seeing, like, males and females in the same class. Like, she was like, when she told me that when the first day she went to the school, she tried to go to the corner, that there was more female than males in the classroom, because she didn't feel comfortable. But now, like, it's been a few months, she's very happy. She has, like, friends, males and females. And I always find it that the girls, they find it easier to get used to the educational system here and, in general, the atmosphere of school than the guys. Because I think it might be because the guys in Syria, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's the same here. The boys, when they're like 14 or 15, maybe sometimes younger too, during the summer period of from the school, they usually, those boys would go and work in a supermarket or work with a relative and make money. So they have that instinct of, like, school is soon finished and I'm going to start working. But the girls are more like, oh, I'm going to study and go to university and all this stuff. So the boys, I think because of that, the boys, when they come here, they find it harder to, like, mix with that school atmosphere, especially the school hours here is way longer than it is in Syria. In Syria, it starts at 8:30 and at 1 o'clock it finishes. And some schools would have 7 days a week. It was only recently that we have 2 weekends off. It used to be 7 days a week. Each class would be 45 minutes. We do 2 classes of 45 and then 15 minutes break, and then 2 classes of 45, 15 minutes break, and then 1 class of 45, and then you go home. There's no lunchtime in there. There's usually school buses for every school. They would come and pick you up from in front of your home and take you to the school. That's it. In Syria, we don't change the classes. The teachers change the classes. Like, the students always stay in one class. You're grade one, grade 1A, this is your class, like, for the whole year. You don't change your class. There are, I think, less school trips in Syria. They don't do as much as they do here. Most schools, yards or gardens, wouldn't be gardens. It's called garden, but it's not like that, except the tenants on the floor, that's it. Some schools would not let the kids go out of the school during the school time, so the break would be around the classes. That's the only difference. They love spice. So usually, in general, like, not only Armenians, like, Armenians and also, like, in general, people from Syria, their breakfast would be savory. Like, we're not used to sweet stuff for breakfast. Armenians love spicy food. They love meat a lot. Like, a lot. Barbecuing is like one of their favorites. I'm sure you will see this. It's one of the common things to see the husband of this Armenian family on a Sunday lunchtime will be in their white t-shirt, shorts they would wear in the beach, and flip-flops outside doing barbecue. That's an image you will see. It's like all over the country, like an image of a male sitting in front of a fire with white t-shirts, nothing else, and shorts he would wear in the beach. And they would, like, the women are not allowed to touch that barbecue once the man is sitting there. That's it, yeah. She would just make, yeah, Sundays is the days my mom used to love because my mom and dad would go to the church and then my mom would come home. She doesn't have to worry about shopping. She just makes the salad and sits there. And she's like, your dad is cooking the lunch today. And my dad is like on that fire with like all that smoke on her barbecue. So Sunday is barbecue day. Yeah. That's only in Iran. Only in Iran. Okay. So this is, how are you? Or what's wrong with you? Okay. This gesture, for adults, from an adult to an adult, it's wait. Later, like, wait a minute, okay? But if a parent does this to the kid, the end of the world. This is like, wait, I will show you. I'm not talking now. So if you see the mom or the dad do that to the kid, save the kid. Yeah, and then you have such as, like, telephone. It's like, you know, this is like, are you crazy or out of your mind? Yeah. But then the most common one is like, how are you? Like, what's going on? What's wrong with you? Yeah. Okay, so the biggest holiday of the whole year is the Sabbath one, which is the memory of the genocide. The Armenians all over the world celebrated. It's on the 24th of April. And I think there's like a march that goes on here in Vancouver too. This year is going to be the 101st year, which internationally it's not a political issue that can be on the court anymore because after 100 years it passes on a case in a court, like internationally. It's not valid anymore, so it's going to be the first year that like the hope is lost to get anything back, or even the rest of the country to recognize the genocide. It's like it's just a memory of it now. The second biggest thing would be the Christmas. The Armenian Christmas is in 7th of January. 6th at night we do the Christmas Eve, and the 7th is the Christmas Day, and then it's the Easter, one of the biggest ones. And then the most fun one is something that all Armenians love. So Armenians, before becoming Christians, they were pagans. So one of the famous things that used to happen then is there was a goddess that was called Astrid and Bart. They were the goddess of water and the earth, and in general, like bringing peace. They used to worship these goddesses before going to war. So this is the only tradition that's left from before Armenia was Christian, which is in July, I think, July 7th. It changes every year according to the Easter, because they go with, like, after the Easter by like 100 and something days. So it changes according to the Easter. It is the day where everybody has to have water on them. So if I know one of you is Armenian, I would literally pull a glass of water and pour it from your head. And you will want that because everybody believes that it's your luck for that year. This is in July, and it's one of the big celebrations that Armenians love to celebrate it. One of the ways of celebrating it is roses. You bring roses to the rivers. You just put rose petals on the rivers, and you, like during the years they Christianized it, and they do their prayers, or sometimes they do the Sunday masses around the rivers, and it's a day to be thankful. It's like a Thanksgiving with water and roses, like that. But it is a day that in Armenia or in Syria, especially in the Armenian district, you can't walk and stay dry. They love it. They love it. They all drink. You have a 7-year-old son, your grandfather would be, if you're an Armenian, your grandfather would be like, you're 7-year-old, you're going to become a man. Drink, drink, drink. Armenians love arak. I don't know if you guys know the Greek ouzo, the thing that you mix with water and becomes white. That's the favorite thing they would have with barbecue. It's not that they would sit at home and they're just drinking. Like, drinking here has a whole another level. Like, my husband's British, and his mom and dad love drinking wine. And they're like, oh yeah, we drink alcohol when we have dinner. And I'm like, no, like, Armenians drink more. It's not only during dinner. Like, you go to, for example, on a weekend when you go as a family to another family to visit them, the kids would be playing, the wives are having coffee or wine, and the two husbands would be like a bottle of whiskey in there to finish it. But it's a communal thing. So they do drink. They don't have any strictness for drinking. They drink a lot of whiskey and that arak. And wine is what Armenians drink during Easter. And in the church, when they do, I don't know what to call that. Yeah, communion. Yeah. Contacts, but the thing is, I found it, I used to, like, when I first got here, there wasn't a lot of refugees here in September, so I was like, yeah, when I see them, or like when I start meeting them, I'm going to just put them in contact with each other, but most of them don't actually stay in touch. I think it's because of the difference of where they come from. Like, even they are from Syria, like I said, Syria is a very multicultural place. So, like, they might be from the same country, but they don't get along because of the differences of belief. Or, like, I know 2-3 families here. They are Muslim. Only one of them, I can invite them to my house because I know they don't mind the lifestyle I live in because I live with 13 people in the house. The other 2 families, I can't invite them. I do invite them, but when they come, they're just sitting like that, and like they're not comfortable because they're not used to that lifestyle. I think that's what's happening with the rest of them. Even though both of them are Muslims, both of them are from villages, and they come from the same country, they just couldn't, like, they are in touch, but they just couldn't, it doesn't happen like the way you expect that, oh, you're from the same country, and we're going to be like best friends here. I don't think that's happening. Unless they're from the same city and same area in the city. That's a downside of it. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I hope that was helpful.
And we'll call you because we'll need more tips as we go on. Yeah. Thank you. so much.
If you have more questions, guys, you just like can ask Diana and ask me, and I'll be very glad to help.
Thank you.
Thanks.